Oh, Mary, oh, think of the poor. This ointment, it could have been sold. And think of the blankets, and think of the bread you could buy with the silver and gold, he said. You could buy with the silver and gold. He's not wrong, you know. Judas asked Mary, why was this perfume not sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor? 300 denarii was a lot of money. The average laborer made one denarii a day, so Mary is essentially pouring out a whole year's wages onto the feet of Jesus. Think of all the good you could do with that, all the bread and the blankets, all the outreach programs and the public education initiatives. You could really make a difference, change the world with that kind of money. And Jesus is like, leave her alone. There will always be poor people. Well, that doesn't seem like a very good attitude, Jesus. Because when we see problems, we want to try to fix them, right? Last week in our Away of Faith group that has been meeting after Sunday worship, we discussed what it might mean to be the hands and feet of Christ in our modern world. And we made a list, because we like lists, of local, national, global issues that need the presence of Christ. Things like poverty, homelessness, climate change, and the unjust distribution of power. And as our list was growing and growing, someone asked the question, well, how are we going to actually do all of this? Racism, Islamophobia, income inequality, cyberbullying, migrant caravan, fake news, civic disengagement, the opioid crisis, the polarization in our politics, whole islands of plastic floating in our oceans. What do we do? Where do we even start? How do we fix all of this? Up until starting here at Jubilee last September, I spent my whole career in the charity and not-for-profit world. I worked as a consultant with dozens of organizations to raise grassroots movements of support for their issues and causes. We ran awareness campaigns and built websites and organized protests and held public meetings and lobbied politicians. And we definitely tried to get some of those 300 denarii. Don't waste it on feet. Think of all the good we could do. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's vital work and it takes money. But I can also tell you that there's a tunneled vision that takes over when you're trying to change the world. Your thing becomes the most important thing. Your issue, the most important issue. The fate of the universe rests on my shoulders. And it can be overwhelming. I spent almost 20 years in that world, which made me absolutely ancient. There's a lot of staff turnover in not-for-profit organizations. Most people don't last that long. Creative, smart, talented, dedicated, passionate people. But the fires of idealism get doused by reality. Passions drown out by how things actually work in our hyper-consumeristic society where power and money and entertainment seem to be the only boats that float. The rich get richer, the poor are still here. When you are trying to change the world, there are a lot more losses than wins, and people burn out. They drop out, or worse, they become cynical, passions paved over, just going through the motions. Jesus was right. The poor are still here. The machinery of empire still grinds away. So what do we do? Where do we even start? How do we fix all of this? The second century theologian, Origen of Alexandria, wrote, "The scriptures were composed through the Spirit of God, and they have not only that meaning which is obvious, but also another which is hidden from the majority of readers. For the contents of scripture are the outward forms of certain mysteries and images of divine things." When we read scripture, there is the visible and the less visible, the obvious and the mysterious. I picked our hidden scripture from the book of Judges for this morning because I wonder if the story of Caleb, Asher, and Othniel is just such a story. On the surface, it's pretty straightforward. This story is placed historically after the time of Moses and Joshua, but before the time of King Saul and David, a time in Israel's history where a succession of patriarchs rose to prominence and waged war against each other and neighboring tribes for control of the land. And following the social custom of the day, one of the patriarchs, Caleb, offered his daughter Asha in marriage along with some land to a soldier, Othniel, who had won a key military battle. The gifted land is dry and barren and lifeless. So Asha goes to her father and says, "Thanks, but we're going to die out here without some water. We can't build a new life here without your help." So Caleb gives the couple two springs of water. Two springs, the upper and neither springs. Pretty straightforward. And it's important to honor that this is a story about a specific family on a specific piece of land under a specific set of cultural circumstances. And yet, I wonder if origin might also be right, if the story of the two springs might point to a larger, more universal story, a mystery underneath the obvious. An overarching arc in Hebrew scriptures is that there is a quest for home, a home where the people can live in peace with prosperity and justice and reconciled relationships. This is the fundamental promise of God. And so stories like that of Caleb, Asha, and Othniel can be seen as an archetype of all people who are trying to negotiate and figure out what it actually means to live into that promise. What do we need? And what do we need to do in order to live in peace and prosperity, in healthy relationship with each other, with the land, and with God? In Glastonbury, England, there are two springs of water. They're right next to each other on opposite side of a small valley. But due to differing sediments in the soil, the water flowing from one of the springs is tinged red, and the water from the other is a cloudy white. The red and the white springs. And I'm not sure if any of you have ever been to Glastonbury. It's a neat place. It's close to Stonehenge. It's the home of the King Arthur legends. And it's been a place of spiritual significance for thousands of years. It's the kind of place you can get a million different kinds of healing crystals, but if your car breaks down, you're out of luck. So in Glastonbury, there are two springs of water. And since humans have been on the land, these springs have been places of pilgrimage, sacred ceremony, and rich symbolism. For the ancients, and then adopted by Christians, the red spring represents the human realm, the flesh, our passions and creativity, our ingenuity, the best of ourselves, and our brokenness. The white spring represents the divine realm, the spirit, the mystery, that grace that flows directly from the heart of God. And for centuries, the water from the two springs, the red and the white, the flesh and the spirit joined together to make one sacred river that nurtured the landscape as it flowed out to the sea. Sometime near the end of the 19th century, town officials decided to cap the white spring and divert its water into a reservoir. And a road was built in the middle of the valley. A road was built, and a slash of asphalt now separates the two springs. The human and divine streams no longer flow together. A specific story about a specific place, an archetype for something larger, more universal. Both can be true. Said Jesus to Mary, "Your love is so deep, today you may do as you will. Tomorrow you say I am going away, but my body I leave with you still," he said. "My body I leave with you still." A fundamental affirmation of our faith is that in Jesus Christ we see the revelation of God within humanity. The spring of humanity and the spring of divinity coming together. One life that flows in the specific and in the universal. In Jesus, we see the expression of flesh and spirit, the obvious and the mystery. In him, we find the outpouring of human passion, our ingenuity, creativity, compassion, charity, those qualities within us that seek to solve problems, make things better, our science, medicine, technology, theology, urban planning, public policy, the outpouring of human passion. And in him, we also see the outpouring of God's passion, grace, endless, boundless, transformative grace, reconciliation, redemption, the ability to start again. Behold, I make all things new. My promise is true, for I am Christ, the way. The poor of the world are my body, he said. To the end of the world they shall be. The bread and the blankets you give to the poor, you know you'll have given to me, he said. You'll know you have given to me. If we want to know how to be the hands and feet of Christ in the world, we need to know what his hands and feet feel like. Mary sits at his feet, touches his feet, and offers a remarkable gift. She anoints him with the very best of herself. If we truly want to know what to do so that all people may live in peace and prosperity, we have to ask ourselves, are we willing to make such an offering? Intimate and all-encompassing, the very best of ourselves? Or are we just focused on the denarii? If we want to know how to be the hands and feet of Christ in the world, we need to know what his hands and feet feel like. When Jesus stretches out his hand and says, follow me, do we turn away and say we're too busy, we're too important, we can do this on our own? Or do we have the humility to know that we could never do it on our own? We are to participate in God's work of healing and mending. We are not incidental to God's purposes of peace and justice, but things do not rely entirely on us. We are not alone in this. When Jesus stretches out his hand, do we have the courage to take it, to feel its warmth, and trust him to lead us in good ways? Being the hands and feet of Christ means knowing what his hands and feet feel like. It means meeting the outpouring of his life with the outpouring of our own on this land where we need help to make a new life of peace and prosperity for all. There are two springs of water, the upper and the neither, the red and the white, the obvious and the mysterious. Fixing the problems of the world requires fixing the problems of our soul, our individual and collective soul. This means ripping up that road we have built between the human and the divine, ripping up that road that splits our spirit from our body, ripping up that road that separates from one another and the land that separates our passion from God's passion. We can live in peace with prosperity, justice, and reconciled relationships. This is a fundamental promise of God. And this is the promise given voice in these words that we will sing together in a few minutes. Behold, behold, I make all things new, beginning with you and starting from today. Behold, behold, I make all things new. My promise is true, for I am Christ, the way.